This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas, presented by U Mobile.
Good morning. You're listening to The Breakfast Grill, and I am Giri Balakrishnan. For most of us, insurance coverage is a necessary evil. In fact, most insurance companies would like for us to believe that we can't live without it, literally. But is that really the case? Overall, stagnation in market penetration might suggest that growth prospects are limited. But we have with us someone who might be able to give us a more optimistic perspective. With us this morning is Rohit Nambiar of AXA Affin Life Insurance Berhad. Welcome to the show, Rohit.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Rohit, AXA with its partner Affin is one of the larger life and general insurance players in Malaysia. Now let's look at the ecosystem that you're operating in. Malaysia's regulatory requirement has been pushing for foreign ownership of companies to be limited to 70%. Now, in the case of Affin AXA, of course, the percentage is significantly different. We have a 49%, 51% arrangement. Now, what does this mean for the growth and development of the Malaysian insurance industry, in your opinion, where you have this requirement to have a local partner holding a minimum of 30%?
I think AXA, first of all, as you rightly said, AXA Affin, on both the life and GI side, we are well below the 70% threshold. So there is no issue for us. Our view is each regulator will take a view on this one. However, wherever we've gone in Asia, be it in China with ICBC, which has 16,000 branches, the largest bank in the world, be it with Mandiri in Indonesia, which is again a top two bank, be it with Krungthai in Thailand, we've always partnered with local banks or local partners. The reason is AXA brings insurance expertise from multiple markets, and the local partner brings us the customer knowledge and also the whole banking ecosystem into which we can tap. So for us, we view this very positively, and the thresholds are a function of each regulator's view, and we generally don't have a view on that one.
The idea is that there seems to be some degree of arm twisting, for lack of a better term, to allow foreign insurers to participate in the local market. So this is where the 30%, 70% threshold comes into play. But you don't feel that that is what the objective is, or that is the direction that they've taken. Now, in tying up with Affin, for example, what are the benefits that you actually get as an insurer? Is it because of their branch network, or is it because of their presence? Because it's not from their skill sets in the insurance industry that you've tied up with them. How would you look at that?
There are three distinct reasons. AXA is the world's number one insurer on most indices, particularly on the brand index from Interbrand survey for the last 9 years. Having said that, in Malaysia, we're an unknown when we came in. So that's where the Affin brand adds a certain affinity with the consumer. The second one is it gives us access to the wide branch network and the customer, which comes with it. The third is it does give us a certain access to what I call tier two, tier three cities, which today we may not be able to hit organically. So that's what Affin really gives to the AXA Affin partnership.
Now, in December 2017, there was another transaction which took place between Affin and Feldar Global Ventures, where Affin actually purchased a 12.9% stake that Feldar Global Ventures was holding in the insurance business. This transaction, of course, took place at a time when Feldar Global Ventures was and still is mired in allegations of abuse of power and mismanagement. What advantages are there in having acquired a further stake as far as Affin is concerned?
So Affin acquired it in the general insurance business, where, as you know, in April this year, we moved into number two in the market. So extremely impressive position. It's profitable. It's doing very well. So what has now happened is both on the life and general insurance side, we have relatively similar structures, slightly different. In the GI side, we have a small percentage. AXA has more than Affin. On the life side, Affin has more than AXA. But effectively, what we are saying is we now have two shareholders with a very small percentage of minority. So it's cleaner. It's easier. We know, for example, as management, who we have to go to. And that's what it's facilitated. From an Affin perspective, it's clearly a signal from their side that they want to have a bigger say in the profits coming from this business. And it worked well because Feldar was divesting out of its non-core businesses. So it's a happy marriage of two thoughts, if I may say so.
So when you say that AFIN wants to have a bigger say in the profits or in the operations of the insurance business, where do they bring in their expertise, as it were, to help the insurance business grow as far as AXA is concerned?
So their expertise comes in terms of the local market knowledge, their customers, their branch, you know, network that they have. And finally, their expertise also comes in terms of their expertise of where this country is heading towards. So it helps a European insurer to be more aware of local market dynamics.
To meet this 30% local ownership requirement, foreign insurance companies effectively only have three options. One would be to list on the local bourse. Another would be to sell a stake to possibly a government-linked investment company. Or thirdly, to form a commercial relationship with a local party, as AXA has with AFIN. So what factors are taken into consideration when considering which path is selected?
Each shareholder or each global insurer has a different outlook on this one. In general, why not? Most insurers would like to keep more of the profits in-house, right? It's just a natural game that everybody plays. But having said that, which option is chosen is a function of the, you know, insurer. I'll give you an example of AXA. We are listed in US, so we are not only listed in Paris, we now have AXA US listing. We have a minority stake in ICBC AXA. We also have 49% stake in our businesses in Malaysia and in India. But we also have 100% stake in, say, businesses in Hong Kong, Singapore, etc. So it's quite diverse. It's a function of whether 49% is allowed, whether 51% is allowed, whether 100% is allowed, and also how the two partners come together. So I think each insurer will make their view on what they want to do, what each market gives them, and it's a function of that.
So the marriage is really determined on a case-by-case basis and not so much determined necessarily by the regulatory requirements of any particular country.
The regulator does drive certain decision-making. For example, we couldn't have had 100% in India, because the regulation in 2000 said we can only own 26%. And then in 2015, if I remember correctly, it went up to 49%. So it's a function of regulation, but it's also, if we have the maneuvering space, then it's a function of what do we want to do. For example, do we want to set up 100% greenfield and go through the hard work? Or do we want to tap into a network that is already existing in the market, which gives us access to people, is the question.
So AFIN gives you that access because Absolutely. Of their banking network, the various branches they have throughout the country. Looking at the Malaysian market and the industry, statistics show that market penetration has in fact stagnated at about 54% and is growing at a very lethargic rate of slightly less than 5% per annum. The Malaysian government has actually set a target of penetration of 75% by 2020, which is 1.5 years down the line. Realistically, what level of penetration is available within the given time frame? Because 75 to 54, that's quite a big jump, and that's not likely to happen within 1.5 years.
I think I have a slightly different view on this one, because what I mean by that is, for me, first of all, the penetration numbers seem too high. Because when you say penetration, in insurance, there's a truth behind the penetration. One is penetration, which means somebody having a policy. The second one is being underinsured. So what we are seeing in Malaysia is we are seeing, even though there is a larger population that's penetrated, there is a large part of that population which is underinsured, which means, for example, someone whose financial need analysis would tell you that the person needs to probably have a fund worth of 1 million when he retires or something happens to him. We notice their fund would be probably 100,000, 150,000. So they're grossly underinsured. So there are two distinct issues. That's why we look at the market as who is not penetrated and who is underinsured. So the underinsured population today we are targeting, and we follow a multi-channel strategy. So we use agency and bank assurance to target the underinsured population, because they are typically what we call the mass affluent established families, people who have a car, people who have a home, etc. And to the under-penetrated segment, which is the B40, but also the young people, we believe we will need to have newer modes of distribution. And that's where digital and partnerships come in, which means non-financial partnerships, telecom, for example.
Yes, actually, Malaysia offers very favorable demographics, with about 85% of the population, or roughly 27 million, below the age of 55. But sluggish growth seems to persist in the industry. What do you attribute this sluggishness to, and how do you plan to overcome this?
See, I think there are global factors as well. If you look at it globally, there have been two issues that have weighed up on the markets across the world. One is initially the North Korea issue, which seems to have phased away now. And then the latest one is the trade tensions between US and China. So that's why if you look at most countries, the Q1 was very good. Last year, in general, the markets did very well. And Q2 was very sluggish. In Malaysia, it has been, I would say, almost a double dip impact, because on one side, you had the trade tensions. On the other side, which happens to every country when you have elections, there is a certain degree of uncertainty that global investors had. So that's why you saw in May and June a net outflow, although the local investors invested a lot more. So you can see the positive momentum locally. But I think global investors are watching at this point in time. So that's why there has been a short-term double dip impact, if I may say so. But from our perspective, we remain extremely confident about the medium to long-term fundamentals. Malaysia is neither a Hong Kong or a Korea in terms of the maturity, nor is it India, Indonesia, or Philippines in terms of lack of maturity. We put Malaysia somewhere in the middle, which means there is still growth left. But at the same time, we need to now tap more of the consumer who's already been tapped. So that's really our approach.
With us on the Breakfast Grill is Rohit Nambiar, the CEO of AXA Affin Life Insurance. Next up, we look at the disruptive technology in the industry and also get an answer to the question we all have when it comes to insurance. Just how much insurance do we really need? Stay tuned for that right here on BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Good morning. You're listening to the Breakfast Grill and I am Giri Balakrishnan. With us today is Rohit Nambiar, the CEO of AXA Affin Life Insurance. Rohit, you've been a strong supporter of introducing disruptive technology in the insurance industry. In fact, AXA Affin is the first insurance company in Malaysia to launch an online insurance medical card. This product targets millennials who spend 3.5 hours per day on mobile devices. The target market is very narrow and possibly cannibalistic. Can you explain your strategy?
Okay, so first things first, right? So we have a rock-solid general insurance business. We are number two in the market. On the life insurance side, we're a very small company. We're the last entrant in Malaysia as of date. So we need to be different. If you look at the top three, four players, they have 65% of the market. So they're all going behind the same customer segment, which is the mass affluent established families and the affluent group. The young professionals, young couples, are people who are totally under-penetrated today, and people who, when we do the consumer survey, so we did a focus group and we did a consumer survey, we found that this group was under-penetrated because of three reasons. One, they found insurance too expensive. So someone who's earning 1,500 ringgit a month, to be told that the average ticket size of a product would be 2,500 a year, it's a lot of money to give away 300 to 250 ringgit a month. So we said we have to get the right price point, and the right price point most people think today is mobile recharge. The second one is they found insurance too complex. And third one is they find insurance too difficult to understand. The process was too difficult to buy and the product is too difficult to understand. So what did we do with online health insurance as a result of all of this? We said the number one pain point today is health insurance. People are underinsured. They are one disease away from bankruptcy. What we did was we said, let's create a market of our own in this segment. So tomorrow when these guys become wealthier, the brand they will remember is AXA Affin. Because when tomorrow they're wealthier and are mass affluent, established family, etc., my advisors and agents will go in and help them. Because they will need more complex financial solutions. They will need financial need analysis, etc. At this point in time, I will acquire them at a very cheap price. So you look at the eMedic solution. We are looking at a starting price of 32 ringgit per month. We are looking at a process which doesn't take more than 5 minutes. You can ask the team. We went through a beating up project internally of saying no sales should take more than 5 minutes. It's all digital, which means you click, 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 and you buy. As a result of this, we are also getting a lot of customers who are coming in and saying, wow, I do want to buy AXA product, but I want a higher cover or I'm not in the millennial segment. So those go to our agency. And we are helping build our agency channel as well. So the strategy really is to go behind a new segment, which tomorrow will become the core insurance segment. And I would position ourselves as the leader in that segment.
So actually the part where it becomes cannibalistic is that your current or the traditional way of doing sales for insurance is through agents. And if you have disruptive technology that we're talking about, the role that your agents would play is actually, at least at the initial stage, reduced because there is no longer that communication between the agent and the potential client.
Actually, on the contrary, I'll tell you why. When we launched eMedic, for example, my top six agents were there at the launch. My number one agent, who contributes 20% of my sales, was actually there at the launch. The reason is we told them a very clear story. Listen, with digital, we are going behind those young professionals and young couples who you do not want to sell to. Because at 50 ringgit, you probably earn 6-7 ringgit commission. It's not worth your effort for you. So let us go to them, break through them digitally. But the core segment, which is the mass affluent established segment, where you are probably selling 2,500 ringgit policies, will continue to be serviced by the agents. So we are effectively not only protecting the current base, but we are also creating a new base for them. And that's what attracts a lot of agents to AXA today.
So what target are you looking at in terms of numbers that you're going to get on board? We have, let's just say, in the next 5 years, because right now you've got less than 1% from this recently launched product. In Asia, we're looking at between 5 to 10% penetration using similar disruptive technology. What is AXA Affin's forecast for the next 5 years?
That's a great question, right? I think the opportunities are unlimited for me. China is an exception because China is disrupted a lot more. You rightly said in the life insurance space, it is between 5 to 10%. India is starting to break through that 5 to 10% barrier. Our feeling is we want to be the market leader in the digital space in 5 years' time. So we want to have a majority market share in that space. So we are talking about, you know, look at the market leader today in the traditional space. They're talking about 20 to 25% market share. So we could look at, you know, having that market share within that 10% that you're talking about. If you ask me, I could throw a figure to say that we are talking here of a potential size of 70 to 100 million ringgit of premiums. But again, it depends on who goes and grabs it. We believe we've made the first mover, and we're going to make several more first movers in the next few months.
And the introduction of this technology potentially reduces the cost of insurance, whether life, medical, auto, or even fire for that matter, if it's also in the offing. Could you give me two examples of how this cost savings translates to the customer?
Yeah, so I think there are two parts to it. One is when you digitalize a process, you get rid of a lot of paper. You get rid of a lot of unwanted touch points. You get rid of a lot of, you know, traditional ways of doing things. So, for example, with eMedic, you claim online, you buy online, and you even service online, which means there is no physical paper. There is no unwanted touch point. As an example, we generally are able to cut our processes by anywhere between 80 to 90%. The second one is with robotics process automation, which we have adopted. What we are able to do is RPA helps in two parts. One, RPA helps in automating a process which is manual, well-defined, very quickly. The second one is some of our legacy systems, which insurers struggle with. We are able to connect to it with the help of an RPA in a very cost-effective manner. For example, an API would be, you're talking millions here. An RPA, you're talking less than 100K.
So does this translate to lower premiums, but for similar coverage or higher coverage even? I mean, with the introduction of this technology, because your cost savings at your back end should really translate to benefits for the customer.
I think it'll be in two steps. First step, yes, you will see a lower premium for sure. But remember, the sum assured that a digital channel sells and an agency channel sells is totally different. An agent talks to a much more higher net worth personality, which means they require higher cover. So our coverage, for example, for digital product is 100,000 eMedic, but our coverage for our agency product, which is quite popular as well, is 1.5 to 3.5. We in fact have the highest coverage in the market. Now, coming back to you, it does reduce cost in the short run, but I think it will reduce even more in the long run as economies of scale set in. Today, the problem with digital channel is because it's a new channel and we are trying something totally disruptive. I know a second player has followed us now. Because we're so new, we are getting into unknown territory, which means there is a certain cost that you incur from the technology, from the digital, from the marketing, etc., which does weigh down. As the production picks up and the economies of scale set in, the premiums will go down even further.
Okay, this is another question I think which has been a bit of a burden for many people when it comes to taking up insurance. Is there an ideal ratio between medical, personal accident and life policy that an individual can use as a benchmark? I mean, how much insurance is enough?
Actually, that's really not, there's no one answer for that because it depends on each individual, really. to understand what is the income of the person today, what's the expense of the person today, what level of coverage do they require for retirement, for protection, for health, etc. So there are different, it's extremely individual. And what our agents do as a part of their financial need analysis is they work with you to identify what you need. But the challenge we face in emerging Asia in general is that people more have a conversation on how much can I afford, not so much on how much do I need to be covered for. As a rule of thumb, what we do is we first look at their income today, their discretionary expense, and say you should at least have a fund worth the amount, which is the income minus the discretionary expense, when you retire to keep your life at the level you are today. So that's kind of the broad way we look at things, and that's how we look at this whole process.
Okay, Rohit, thank you for joining us on the Breakfast Grill today. That was Rohit Nambiar, CEO of AXA Affin Life Insurance. I am Giri Balakrishnan for BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, Frost & Sullivan Malaysia's mobile data service provider of the year.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.